said.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta...
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
It's that time of the week again, the Sportsaholics episode number 99. No whistle. That's all. Eric's in New England. He's not here. I've got no train whistle. I don't own a train whistle. I haven't since I've been 11. And for whatever reason, he does own one. And that's why I think it's hilarious to have the train whistle. I think at some point around 12 or 13, all of us that had train whistles lost them, or they got thrown away or stolen. Something happened to it. But this is episode 99, the great one, the Wayne Gretzky episode. I'm not a hockey guy. I've been to, I think, two Kings games. Or no, I'm sorry, one Kings game and then one Stars Ducks game in Anaheim. And I believe an IHL Kansas City Blades game in 93, which I believe they were IHL Cup champions, the minor league affiliate at the time to the San Jose Sharks. But I'm not a hockey guy. I grew up in a non-hockey area. Though one of my really good friends did play junior hockey on a traveling team, but they would drive up to Wisconsin every weekend, like 8 hours. Anyway, so I was around the sport. I like it. I compare it kind of to soccer. Like, I would much rather go to a hockey game than a soccer game, but I understand both sports equally as little, if that makes sense. Like, I get it. You try to score a goal, but I don't understand the plays in hockey. The incredible moves are impressive. I don't appreciate it. And so, but the great one, Wayne Gretzky. I mean, Pro Stars, one of the best cartoons ever. You have Bo Jackson, you know, and Wayne Gretzky kicking ass. Oh man, I can't think of now. Hold on. I got to think of. There's one more, and I can't think of it. I think is it Joe Montana? Hold on. This is horrible. I'm looking it up. There we go. Pro Stars cartoon. Encyclopedia. Let's see here. How is it? Oh, and Jordan, of course. Yeah, so it was Jordan and Gretzky. How did I forget Jordan and Bo Jackson? But Wayne Gretzky, obviously the great one, still does his thing. Daughter, really attractive now. Son, you know, a lot to live up to. Probably not a hockey player, but lives in L.A. and just kind of runs around town, pops his head into some Kings games from time to time. And, you know, people love him. He's not Magic Johnson. He doesn't own the Dodgers. But Wayne Gretzky, you know, gets his fair share of love in Southern California. But, guys, spring training's here. Guys and gals, can you believe it? It's already here. Pitchers and catchers, as you're listening to this, are throwing balls back and forth saying, no, your form's bad. Or, no, you're dropping your hips. You're releasing too early. Whatever little coaching tips are going on, but that's happening right now. And so in honor of this 2016 baseball spring training season beginning, I thought, what better way to celebrate that than having on Dr. Larry Foley, the director and producer of The First Boys of Spring. And it's a new documentary coming out, and check it out. It's actually this Sunday. If you set your DVRs the 21st of February, it will be on the MLB Network, I believe at 9 a.m., 10 a.m., depending on which time zone you're in. But set your DVRs, watch the movie, especially if you're a sports fan. But we have Larry Foley on to just talk about you know, the history of spring training, and his whole movie revolves around that, and where the origins of spring training came from and why they did it, and that sort of thing. So, you know what? It's a great interview, so we're just going to jump into it right now. We're going to go to break, and when we get back, we will be talking with Dr. Larry Foley, the director, producer of The First Boys of Spring.
might need me different clothes. Way up in Michigan, where the laughing river flows. 20 years in the minor leagues, ain't no place I didn't go. Well, I got a few hits, but I never made the show.
All right, welcome back to Sportsaholics. We're with Dr. Larry Foley, the creator of The First Boys of Spring, a documentary that encompasses the early beginnings or the beginning of spring training. Dr. Foley or Larry, whichever you prefer to call
him. Please, Larry.
Larry, thanks for coming on Sportsaholics. And furthermore, thanks for... spreading baseball history. This looks like a very fascinating movie. And listeners, if you go to our website, I'll post the trailer up there, or you can just search the First Boys of Spring documentary. It'll be up at firstboysofspring.weebly.com or on YouTube. But how'd this all begin, Larry? What was it, a seed that's been in your brain for 10 years, for 20 years, or...
Well, golly, John, it probably has been in my head since I, you know, was just a little kid playing baseball, church league ball, in Portsmouth, Arkansas. I'm a big baseball fan, big St. Louis Cardinals fan. We have a minor league team here in our neighborhood, the Double-A team for the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, so, the Naturals.
Yeah, the Arkansas Naturals, one of the great, great names. In fact, a lot of those guys that were on that World Series team last year came through Northwest Arkansas and played. But a few years ago, the city of Hot Springs, Arkansas, created a historic baseball trail, and with a series of historical markers that honored, paid tribute to the birth of spring training, which occurred in 1886, when the Chicago White Stockings, owned by Al Spalding and managed by player-manager Cap Anson, brought his team down from Chicago on the train, and were the first team to go south for an official spring training. So I knew a little bit about this story. I went down to Hot Springs and read the markers and just kept thinking that as a documentary filmmaker, this one just seems like a natural for not only a documentary filmmaker, but somebody who loves the history of baseball as I do. And it kind of took off from there. It's a project that I did as much research on as anything I'd ever done in my life, but I loved it. I mean, you know, because it's about my favorite topic.
Well, and you're in your neighborhood. I mean, you're in Arkansas, which... That's St. Louis. For those of you on the East and West Coast, like not having the luxury of growing up in beautiful Ozarks, which are absolutely magnificent. But that's Cardinals country. You got the AAA team down in Springfield. And really, I mean, the Cardinals have been a staple in that region. Going on 100 years almost now. And so I'm sure growing up a Cardinals fan, you know, you're kind of retracing your idol's steps and just kind of... retracing a lot of Cardinals history. I don't know if that was a big part of it for you, or if it was you were thinking much bigger picture. But that had...
Well, you know, when I jumped into the piece, I didn't know who played there.
Okay.
I really didn't know. The first scenes that we filmed were shot in October of 2014, and they were unveiling two new historical markers down at Hot Springs, and we went down there on spec, really to get them uncovering those markers, and one of them was Stan Musial. Now, Stan Musial, the great Cardinal, of course, didn't actually train in Hot Springs, but he and Mr. Bush, Gussie Bush, would go down there, stay in the Arlington Hotel, still there, and take those baths as the old players had done decades before. And so that became part of Stan the Man's preseason routine, that and going down to the horse racing track at Oakland Park. So I really didn't know what the Cardinal connection was. And actually, if you look at the research, the St. Louis Browns trained in Hot Springs a couple of times, but the St. Louis Cardinals, when they were the Perfectos, only went to Hot Springs as far as we can tell, 1 year in 1900. But just about everybody else did, which is kind of interesting, you know, from from the New York Giants to the Highlanders, Yankees, to the Philadelphia Athletics and Phillies and the Pirates and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and Cleveland Indians and Reds and on and on and on. But for whatever reason, the Cardinals went there 1 year. They probably had other places to go.
Yeah, they're probably – well, back then, weren't they just barnstorming like year-round anyway? They're like, all right, guys, you get 10 days off.
I'll tell you what happened. The beginning of it all happened in 1886 when there was only a National League, no American League in those days. And the White Stockings, Chicago White Stockings, now known as the Cubs, they had the best team in baseball. They had the game's first superstar, Mike King Kelly, known for his hook slide, probably invented the hook slide. And one of their outfielders was Billy Sunday, who later became an evangelist. And this was a great ball team, but they were heavy drinkers and partiers. And Spalding found out about the mineral baths of Hot Springs, because you could take a train there after the Civil War, the bathhouses and the belief in the therapeutic benefits of hot thermal mineral water really became popular. And so he just decided that, you know, we got to get the boys sobered up. So I think his term was, we need to take them and where they can boil out the alcoholic microbes. So he put them on the train and took them to Hot Springs. And they stayed there a month and worked out in a makeshift baseball field that had once been a goat pasture. And they went back north and they won the National League pennant. Well, by that time, everybody thought, well, there's something going on here. The team, you know, sobered up. They got in shape to play, and they won the pennant. So that's when it really caught on, and it went through the 1880s and 90s and 1900s and then through the 1910s and the teens. About the time Babe Ruth was sold to the Red Sox,
which is what, 1917?
That began to be sort of the beginning of the end of the baseball spring training. But it's important to note that because these baseball players, especially the pitchers and catchers, really believed in that mineral water, even when teams began to move off to Florida, where they had drained the swamps and they were recruiting teams and players to go down there, the pitchers and catchers, many of them, the great pitchers and catchers, Cy Young, Lefty Groh, Walter Johnson, would go to Hot Springs to take those baths. And even today, and then they would join their teams wherever they were training. Even today, as we well know, it's happening now, pitchers and catchers report first. Well, that tradition also started in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Really? And that was just so that they figured just, you know, they're going to need extra medication for their arms? And, you know, was that kind of the theory behind
it? Well, you know, through a long winter, their arms and bodies would get stiff, and they would feel good in those mineral baths, and they would loosen them up, and they would boil out the alcoholic microbes or the fat, and they would just get the feeling really good. Satchel Paige, for the first time, came to Hot Springs in 1932. And Satchel, his entire pitching career, was a real proponent of taking those hot baths. And what's interesting is that the pitchers and catchers came many, many years, even after full teams quit going to Hot Springs. The last full team was in 1925, which, not coincidentally, was the last year Babe Ruth went down there to take the baths before going off to Florida to join the Yankees. But those pitchers and catchers, especially those pitchers, really believed that it would help them get their bodies ready for the season.
Now, scientifically, is there any proof to back that up? Or, I mean, I've taken a salt mineral bath, and yeah, it feels amazing. But is there any studies that have come out that says, like, yeah, this is the absolute best thing? Or was it more of a placebo, or just kind of like, hey, we're here having a great time with the boys, you know, let's just enjoy this before we have to start the season?
Well, you know, I don't know about the research, but, I mean, it's the reason why people have hot tubs. It's the reason why players, athletes today, will soak their bodies. Certainly we know they use a combination of ice and heat and thermal water. But there's something to it. I mean, certainly it made them feel better.
Well, I know.
It would help them bounce back, from throwing.
And that north of Kansas City, there's Excelsior Springs, Missouri, and that was same kind of thing. Presidents would go up there and, just relax. And I mean, it's the same thing that our favorite Hollywood stars are paying $10,000, I'm sure, a week to do.
Well, it just made them feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that even today, if we went out and ran and threw really hard, we'd probably feel better that night and the night and the next day if we soaked ourselves in a hot bath.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would go for. That if that was an option.
And that's pretty much it. Now, Hot Springs really capitalized on this to get the full. They advertised themselves as nature's sanitarium. Their slogan was "We bathe the world," and their campaign promised everything from a cure to tuberculosis and venereal disease to afflictions peculiar to women and alcoholism. So, I mean, they jumped all over it,
yeah.
And there was that heyday, you know, when modern medicine, you know, today we figure that whatever is going on, we can go take some kind of a pill. Well, understand that in the late 1800s, early 1900s, early 20th century, they didn't really have those medications, and people were desperate to find some kind of relief to what ailed them.
Yeah, this was back when, you know, if you had asthma, that meant you had to move to Colorado, you know, or... You know,
well, that's right. If you had tuberculosis, yeah. They would collapse your lung.
Yeah.
So, you know, certainly taking a hot mineral bath would be better than collapsing your lung.
Most definitely. Now, Larry, where can the listener here view the movie? Is there a place online they could buy the movie?
Yes. Well, the first thing I want to let folks know is that this Sunday, February the 21st at 8 a.m., Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, MLB Network will be broadcasting the program. They aired it last Saturday, and then this Sunday, the 21st, it'll be broadcast nationwide.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, folks wanting a DVD can go on uapress.com, and they can find it. They can get the DVD, or they can just purchase or rent a link to the film that way. Folks living in Kansas City can see the full film coming up in the next few weeks. I'm not sure exactly when they're going to run it on their public television station. That's KCPT. Arkansas Educational Television Network will air it again in April. But I'm thrilled that MLB aired it once and is going to air it again this Sunday because they were my target audience. And people who love baseball are really going to enjoy this film. It features the likes of Josh Gibson and Cool Papa Bell and Cy Young and Babe Ruth and Tris Speaker, some of the greatest ball players of all time. In fact, about half the pitchers who are enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and about 45% of the players, had some connection to Hot Springs. Either they trained there, they soaked in the baths before the season, and it was popular for that many years.
That's incredible. And then, listeners, we'll tweet out a reminder this Sunday morning to get up early, set the DVR. But buy it, too. Don't forget to, you know, support the project. You know, putting together a movie is not easy, you know, at all, to get the right people involved. And to get that many OKs on a project is very difficult. And I noticed online you're actually able to purchase the uniforms that you guys wore to recreate some of the scenes. Is that correct?
Well, that's exactly right. I rented those from a company out of K&P Weaver out of Connecticut, and they were made to order for the film to represent the 1912 Pittsburgh Pirates and the 1912 Boston Red Sox. Pirates and Red Sox trained in Hot Springs more than any other teams. And we ordered those uniforms, and in March of last year, we went down to this old historic baseball park in Little Rock. Little Rock's about an hour from Hot Springs. The Hot Springs ballparks are long gone. The Little Rock Field, Lamar Porter Field, which was where Brooks Robinson grew up playing. His old American Legion team, that was it, Lamar Porter. So we had adult baseball players with wooden bats and old antique gloves. They went out and worked out as ball players did and still do, and they played about a four-inning game. And we filmed it for a lot of the scenes because prior to 1925, when Hot Springs was basically not only the birthplace but the home of spring training, there wasn't really any film that had been taken. So we used a lot of those shots. Now, the uniforms are actually at a sporting goods store in Little Rock called Sports Stop, and the proceeds for the sale of those uniforms, if folks want them, are going directly into the restoration and the continued renovation of old historic Lamar Porter Field, which is just a classic old ballpark. That March of 2015, when those players in those old uniforms ran out onto the field and with their old gloves, And you know, we started filming right as the sun came up, and I thought, you know, I'd been thinking about that shoot for about 13 months, and the second they ran out onto that field, on that pale March green, I thought, it just doesn't get any better than this. This was just perfect, and the scenes we utilized throughout the film really brought it to life. That, and certainly having Billy Bob Thornton as our narrator didn't hurt either.
No, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I mean, that's like a real-life Field of Dreams.
It was the best. I've told people it was the best professional day of my life.
Oh, wow. And that's what a reward, too. And, I mean, I can't emphasize, listeners, how difficult it is to get this stuff going. You know, and so, I mean, that must have just been such a rewarding moment for you.
That was fantastic. I had the best photographers I know in the business. Folks that I've worked with for 25 and 30 years, and we had a jib there, we had a GoPro, we had several cameras, we had a slow motion camera. We were just all over the place. Everybody knew what their job was, and it was just fantastic. And it really, really brought realism to the film that we were creating.
You know, when you're trying to tell a story, you know, to be able to recreate the story, you know, I'm excited. Personally, I have not seen the movie yet. As we get done with this interview, I am going to go to my TV and make sure that I'm not missing it Sunday morning, as well as going online and buying a copy, too. It's, for me, as baseball, you know, ages, and it seems like the older it gets, the more history is uncovered. And as a baseball, I won't consider myself a historian. I'm striving to become one. Someday, but projects like this and movies like this just are just amazing. And as a baseball fan, I thank you for putting so much time and effort.
Well, it was great fun, and like I say, you can go to the UA Press website, and you can watch the open of the film. I mean, and that'll get you really you'll decide right then if you want it. My website is thefirstboysofspring.weebly.com. That's got a trailer on there. Some of the photographs we took while we were filming, and also the open to the film, which will kind of give you the flavor. You know, we went all over the country to film this thing. We shot in Kansas City. We shot an interview in Fenway Park. We shot at the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. We shot in Foley Sports Pub in New York City across the street from the Empire State Building, which is the home of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. We filmed in Tennessee and in Ohio and certainly here in Arkansas. Hot Springs is about 3.5 hours southeast of us, so we filmed down there, and we really worked hard at this, and we're just grateful that people seem to really be enjoying the film. You know, when the guys at MLB were telling me how much they enjoyed it, MLB Network, it's like, well, you know, great, we did our job.
Well, and listeners, I have seen the beginning, and I do want it. I mean, that's why I immediately tried to get you on the program, because it is. I'm excited to see the movie itself. Now, have you? Earlier, we were talking about Hall of Fames before we started recording, and you mentioned that the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City is very similar to Cooperstown. And I kind of cut you off. What are some of those similarities?
Well, the Negro League Museum in Kansas City, which is about as close to us as Hot Springs is, we're kind of between the two, and we did film up there, and it is a great, great museum, especially for baseball fans. I have had the great pleasure of going to Cooperstown several times. As a young reporter, I covered the induction ceremony of Brooks Robinson and George Kell, two Arkansas guys that went into the Baseball Hall of Fame at the same time, and I went back. I've been back a couple of times working on this film recently, but I'm going to say something about the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City. It's as good as the National Baseball Hall of Fame, just on a smaller scale. If you go in and look at the exhibits in Kansas City, it's like being at Cooperstown. So if you're closer to the middle of the country, it just doesn't get any better than that. They did a tremendous job. Great people who run that place. Just as there are great people who are running the Baseball Hall of Fame, but you know, I'm a big museum guy and a big history guy, and I can tell you that I've been to some good museums. There's a fantastic World War One museum.
Amen.
In Kansas City also.
I just
it's
went
tremendous. Kansas City is a great town, But that Negro League Museum, it's tremendous. People ought to go.
Well, you know what? They just do very unique things. Like that one scene where you walk around the corner and you're looking at a barbershop and you're like, here's Miles Davis and Satchel Paige hanging right. out after That's a right. Monarchs game. You know, you're just it kind of puts it into perspective right there. You're like, wow. That was like these 4x4 square blocks where the stadium was and where all the bars yeah. were. It's like that was the place to be, you know.
And in the middle of it, they have what they call a field of green.
Oh yeah,
and
the
they
statues.
Have these great statues of these players, you know, Paige and Gibson and Cool Papa Bell and Oscar Charleston and those guys. And you know what? You can go walk in there and walk right up to those statues. I mean, they told me who the artist was, and I couldn't recall it. But I mean, it's like those guys are right there playing ball on that diamond. I mean, those are so lifelike. And that's something even Cooperstown doesn't have. You know, they've got the Hall of Plaques where they've got those faces on there. But I mean, these are full statues of guys positioned around a baseball diamond.
They're
great.
It's great. I don't know if you've read the Soul of Baseball, Joe Posnanski's book on Buck O'Neill, but he talks. There's a scene where Buck and Willie Mays go to the museum, and it actually brought Willie Mays to tears. Like he had to leave because it was so emotional for him.
Oh, I can see it.
But it is very powerful. You know. And you get so overwhelmed with there's so much stuff there. Give yourself 5 or 6 hours, you know, to go through it. But you know, you just can't forget like how much those players had to overcome, you know, and fight through just for almost 60 years. I mean,
for a long time, and actually that's one of the stories we tell in the film. You know, baseball in the very early days of baseball, it was not segregated. And interestingly enough, the guy that is sort of held up as the player manager on that first team that went to spring training, Cap Anson, he's also the guy who was sort of, as he's described in the film, the poster boy for keeping blacks out of the major leagues. Anson just wasn't going to have it. He did not want his players playing against integrated teams, especially going up against black pitchers. And so he was as responsible as anyone from drawing that color barrier that, as we well know, wasn't broken until Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier after World War II. But in Hot Springs, Arkansas, the birthplace of spring training, you had white teams, and you had black teams, and you had white hotels that sponsored teams for black players. And certainly they knew each other, and sometimes they would barnstorm together, as we know. But there is no record of the black teams and white teams ever playing one another on those fields of Hot Springs. In fact, a lot of the black teams came in the 30s after the white teams had stopped coming to Hot Springs and had gone off to Florida.
They were like, well, let's take advantage of these vacancies. If they want to go down there, we'll happily take their spot.
The fields were available.
Yeah.
You know, Florida wasn't really recruiting the black athlete. In the Hot Springs, they had, you know, there was a separate culture down there.
Yeah.
You know, there were black hotels and black nightclubs and black restaurants, and they felt comfortable in that town. As one of the historians tells us, that certainly it was segregated, but not, I think he used the word virulently as so as other places you might have found in the South.
Yeah, it's, and so that is that, you address that theme throughout the movie, and,
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a story of baseball and the story of spring training and the birth of spring training in Hot Springs, Arkansas, was the story of black ball players and white ball players. As one of the historians of the Negro League Museum, Ray Boswell, says, it says that you know, there were great ball players, there were black ball players, there were great white ball players. It doesn't make it one league better than the other. That's just the way it was.
Yeah. Well, listeners, again, go to thefirstboysofspring.weebly, that's weebly.com, or, you know, just throw in the First Boys of Spring into Google, and Google, as always, will take care of you. But check out the movie. Remember, this Sunday, the 21st, Sunday morning on the MLB Network, get up, watch the movie, and better yet, buy a copy. Dr. Larry Foley, amazing interview, amazing project. Thank you so much for coming on Sportsaholics today.
No, thanks so much for having me.
And anything else you would like to say before we let you go?
No, good. I told my grandson the other day, I'm here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, in faculty here, journalism faculty, and the Arkansas Razorbacks open up their baseball season on Friday, and the weather's supposed to be in the 70s, believe it or not. And I told my grandson, who plays baseball, he's 15, and I said, Jeremy, I've gone just about as long as I can stand to go without baseball. It's time to go back to the ballpark. So Friday afternoon, we're headed out there.
I got the fever myself. I bought my opening day Padres tickets. I got got those secured for April 4th. I'm going to spring training. I'm going to Seattle to see the Royals play. I've got 7 games already in the books by the end of March. So
fantastic.
I cannot wait. But Dr. Larry Foley, you are a great man, and thank you so much for contributing to baseball history and for giving us baseball fans something else to watch.
No one really knows when or where the first baseball game was played or who invented the game. Maybe it truly was Abner Doubleday here in the village of Cooperstown, New York in 1839, or so goes the legend. Baseball grew up after the Civil War, becoming the national pastime, and it remains today an American obsession for those who once played the game and wished they still could. The earliest professional teams began searching for a way to knock off the rust from winters of sedentary indulgence. This inspired an annual rite known as spring training, which caught on in the Arkansas resort town of Hot Springs. From the 1880s through the early part of the 20th century, the best who ever played the game came to work on their hitting and pitching and fielding in preparation for long seasons ahead, with such teams as the Dodgers and Red Sox, and the Monarchs and Crawfords and Grays. They were the first boys of spring, and this is their story.
Unveil those things. All right, stand the man.
And word went out that here's a great place to not only play baseball, but perhaps most importantly, get in physical condition to have a successful season.
Ownership felt they needed to boil out the alcoholic microbes. Hot Springs was known as a place that had therapeutic waters, and they came for that reason. And then the ball players turned out to love it because they really not only did get in shape, but they had a great time. These were the greatest players at the peak of their greatness, all gathering in the same small town. So you would have Honus Wagner, Babe Ruth, Tris Speaker, Cy Young, all these guys would be together in the same nightclubs, the gambling casinos, the ball fields.
The history is real here. We don't have to try to manufacture anything, dramatize anything, exaggerate anything. History is played right here.
And I know it's a tricky website, but it's just thefirstboysofspring.weebly.com. But go buy a copy. Have that DVD around. You know, give it to a baseball fan if you got it, or if you are yourself. Do what I do. Read it. Pass it on to your grandpa or someone in your family that would appreciate it. But Larry or Doctor, if you got doctor, I feel bad not calling you doctor, even though he insists on, don't worry about the doctor. I'm like, yeah, well, you earned it. And it's like, you might as well, right? Am I wrong there? I figure. Anyway, thank you for coming on and, spreading some baseball history and some baseball knowledge. And I will be watching Sunday morning, as should you, listener. Sunday morning, MLB Network. February 21st, depending on your time zone, 9, 10 a.m., I believe you said. I can't. Either way, watch it, and then go to the first boys of spring dot Weebly, Weebly.com and check it out. And you know where we're going from here? We're going to, this is amazing, earlier tonight. And so as I'm recording this, it's like 2 a.m. on Wednesday, or I guess now Thursday. And so tonight, our next guest, Jason Lawhead, very, very, very funny comedian and amazing basketball player. We met on the basketball, in the mean streets of Los Angeles years ago, playing basketball in the comedy leagues, and then on Saturdays, hopping fences. So, like, it was great. We actually had to hop a fence to get in and play at this school. It's so, but amazing basketball player, funny comedian. So I wanted to bring him on, just kind of talk about growing up in Ohio and being a Cleveland fan and what it's like to never win ever. It's so, you can find, go check out his comedy. It's hilarious. Halfway through the interview, which we did earlier tonight, I drop in some of his stand-up clip. Like tonight we were at the Madhouse downtown, San Diego, and just crushed. He goes, I'm going to try out this, new that, and both bits just slayed, and he tours all over the country with Bill Burr as his feature act and opening act from time to time. So if you're going to go see Bill Burr, you're probably going to actually go see Jason Lawhead also. So go to his website, Jason Lawhead, LAWHEAD.com, and on Twitter at Jason Lawhead as well. But you know what? We're just going to get right into it. It's a great interview. And again, check out some of Jason's stand up. And yeah, we'll be back right after this. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win! They win!
So, who carries the run that could win the World Series as he leads away from third? The 0-1 pitch. A liner.
And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
On goal line, these are the toughest yards in football right here.
Draw to Biner. Ernest Biner.
Fumble.
Fumble the ball, and Denver has recovered. Oh, my. Biner had the first and goal. And lost the ball.
A disappointed LeBron James for the finals for the ages.
All right, we are back on Sportsaholics with Jason Lawhead, Ohio's native son.
Not the whole state, but yeah.
Is there a divide in the state of Ohio?
No.
There's.
I love Ohio. Is like one of the most prideful states there is left.
Like you would back up Toledo, you know?
Toledo's one of those places in Ohio, though, that you keep them at arm's length.
Because it used to be Michigan, correct? Well, that's what the Battle of... Toledo.
Yeah, there was a battle, right? That at the Battle of Toledo.
It was over shipping, I think. They wanted some more port space or something like that.
Now it's football.
Now
good
it's football.
Old fashioned,
but because
pigskin.
Because of that battle, that's why the Upper Peninsula that was their like, okay, fine, you can have this.
The state up north, as we like to call it. We don't even like to say the word. If you're a true Ohioan, you don't even say the word that begins with an M. I used to do a joke on stage. I would go, I hate everything associated with Michigan. Even in the movie Red Dawn, I rooted for the Russians.
that's about the
Wolverines, you know.
But, that's, yeah. You know what? And coming from Kansas City, that's the Missouri-Kansas hatred right there. It's as deep, I think. And the Ohio State, Michigan, I think, is one of a few that are comparable in the country.
It's so old, that rivalry. It's so embedded.
That's what, yeah, it goes back.
It's gone over so many great coaches as well. It's overlapped so many, you know, it's decided the Big Ten championship and an appearance for the Rose Bowl so many times when that was the only way you got to the Rose Bowl. So many times.
It was through Ann Arbor or through Ann Arbor Columbus. Or
Columbus. Most, I mean, it, you know, most of the time.
Yeah, Illinois wasn't surprising people back then. In the,
every great while.
What did it used to, okay, what, the Big Ten, which is now, what is it? It's the Big Ten.
It's the Big Ten, but there's 14 teams.
But there's 14 teams. What was it was before the Big Ten? Because I know coming from the Big 12, it was, used to be the Big Eight when right. I was growing up.
The Big Ten was 10 schools. And then in 1992, I believe, maybe 93, Penn State, who was an independent all those years, that was just an independent. They were like Notre Dame in the 80s. Paterno was an independent.
Hot shit.
And he would, yeah, he would, but he would just play, you know, teams in the coastal region and then big games against teams like, you know, Florida State, Miami, Florida. Yeah,
a yearly Rutgers, Penn State.
Then they joined to make the 11th in early 90s. And then Nebraska came in. In the middle of this last decade, and join after
which
they
we
left.
Had comedian Todd Munson from BigRedFury.com, also Nebraska native. We talked about that, like,
oh, they love their Cornhuskers there.
Now the Nebraska gets to play Iowa every year, you know, which had never happened.
Yeah,
which was very weird because you know there's just a river that separates them, you know, and there's, you know, I don't know, Omaha maybe. Three quarters, maybe close to a million if you count.
And I was probably mad that they took Cornhuskers first.
Yeah, no kidding. I was like, why are we the Hawkeyes? That is, and then Nebraska's sitting there like, well, what are we going to be the Hawk? We can't be the Hawkeyes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I wonder who named who first. I wonder. That's a good question.
That is very interesting.
Send the research department into the archives to find out that one.
Yeah, you can do that to @JasonLawhead on Twitter.
Yeah, send it to me. I like to do that kind of stuff.
Or at Lawhead's Court, which is your podcast that has been on hiatus, but you're bringing it back, which you should do.
I've had a couple of hiatuses. There's creative.
It's
difference.
Because you're busy. For those of you listening at home, go Google Jason Lawhead. Watch some of the videos. You're killing it all over the country now.
Thanks, John. And John, do me a favor. You say your last name.
Scheezer.
Okay, great.
There you go. Here, I'll write it out phonetically here. This is how I do it.
I always like lose it's, a, no, I always no, no, lose no, a letter okay. in the middle it's, that, you know.
It's all good. It's all good right there. See, that's like a Scheezer.
That's awesome.
I also, if you want to do it, if Weezer had a female cover band.
Gotcha.
Scheezer.
Nice.
Which there actually is.
Is that your closer?
There is. No, but there actually is a female cover band called Scheezer.
Is there really?
Nice. I found them online. Right. I'm like, okay, well, maybe that I can help explain my last name that way. But we go back a long way playing basketball. In fact, you split my eye open one time. You remember that?
Yeah, that's not probably, on purpose.
No, we were both hustling.
We're hustlers. That's all we had left.
For no reason at all.
That's all we had left. That's why I had to quit playing competitive basketball because I used to like go. I remember I took a charge on like Siddiqui Fuller. I remember like I stepped in because I saw it. I read it. I knew it was going to happen. It was a close game. I stepped in the paint on a dribble drive and I got position and I got the call. It was a charging call and I hit the floor and I was like, I was. Probably if I wasn't 40 yet, I was really close to it. And I hit the floor, and I remember the back of my rib cage hit the wood, and I just laid there. And they called and everybody was like, yeah, way to go. I was like, all right, so we got the ball back, but I can barely get up. Man.
Yeah, and you got the ball back for what? For someone to dribble down and just turn the ball over immediately?
Yeah.
Because this was our
I know. I had to come out. I didn't even have the glory to be able to shoot the three the next time down. So I'd be like, you know what? That's the only way I can play, though, Scheezer.
No, I know, because you grew up playing the game. You grew up playing the game. You come from a basketball family. Is that correct?
That's right. Dad was a coach. Like a legendary high school coach in Ohio for almost 40 years.
Almost 40 years.
Varsity coach.
So you grew up in a gym. Yeah. You're one of those.
I was a gym rat, man. That's like one of the first things I remember. I mean, my first memories of life was I was raised like running around grabbing balls and putting them on the rack at my dad's practices and games. And you towel boy, you grow up, and then you know you're doing that kind of stuff. It's really cool. Because the cool thing about that childhood is that my dad had these great teams. First off, he was a highly successful coach, and he had a program that was well respected across the state.
Which high school is this?
Lorraine Catholic High School.
What is it?
Lorraine Catholic, right outside of Cleveland. It's a steel town. Steinbrenner's family owned ship building there, and actually sold off in the late 60s, early 70s, once Japan started really just taking us down in the steel market. All of those types of things went away in towns like ours, and steel was huge in Lorain. The main high school, the public high school, was their nickname was the Steelman, the Lorain Steelman. So you know, the back in those days, you know, I could touch my heroes. I mean, he had all state ball players, some guys going to play Division One ball at the college level. You know, that's back when newspapers covered the local sports scene so heavily. And oh, you know, my and dad was a, they still do, yeah, but yeah, my dad would be on like, not like in our areas, not like they, like it was, you know, we did radio. I mean, I ended up doing the first job I had. What I went to school for, what got me into really stand up is that I see my levels. I'll try to tone down. What really got me into stand up is what I ended up doing was because I loved it so much. I played for my dad, went out to school, and I came back in the first few years out of college. I went to like basically finished at a broadcasting school, right? So my first couple years out of that, I was doing high school football and basketball play-by-play and color commentary for the very radio stations that covered my dad. I actually called a game my dad coached. This is a crazy thing. So I'll tell you a quick little story. When I was a kid growing up, we were called ball boys. You know, me and my brothers got to be ball boys. So we were the kids putting on the balls on the rack when we were young, and we were running out and getting towel and water during the timeouts. And then my dad had, like, team and managers, students that were like in the shirt and tie that got the warm-ups ready, that got the water bottle, the real stuff. And we were just like the little guys running around grabbing the balls during the warm-ups, putting them on the rack and that kind of stuff. And that gets to be cool. You do that until you're like 12, and then the games are like, you're starting to junior high, you start hanging around with your friends at the games, and you break away from that, right? Anyway, I got to do that whole experience, and it was really cool because, you know, my heroes were guys like Rich Cerrone and I'm 44, so my first memories, I can really remember the 77-78 team that my dad had, because my oldest brother Jim was a junior, and they had this guy Rich Cerrone who was 6'5". He was all state, two-time conference player of the year. He was six. I mean, he rangy outside shooter, probably one of the best shot blockers you'll ever see in high school basketball. Runs the floor, beautiful, just finish around the rim. I mean, and this guy could dunk. He could leap, and he could dunk the ball with ease. And so my dad would run these to open practice every time. My dad would run these three-man weave drills. Full court, three-man weave, pass it around. Guy that gets it closest to takes two dribbles, finishes it with the layup. You come up, you know, you run a full court, maybe four times up and down and start getting loose. And he would put on a dunking display. And I was like 5 years old, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. And then so many of these guys, what was cool about my dad's program was, like over the holidays and sometimes if on a long break from college, some of these dudes that played for my dad that were playing D3 ball or just really good players that never went, come back and they would scrap and practice with those dudes. And you'd get to see a guy that averaged 20-some a game now at 23 still playing and then going up and just doing stuff. And you're just like, damn, like, wow. Like my dad had a couple guys that I never got to remember see play because I was too young, but then got to see them in their mid-20s come back to practices. Now they're bigger, stronger. They've been playing in leagues or whatever. They played D3 for 4 years, and now they're – and these dudes are just
in the prime
bad. Oh, my God. And you're just – you know, and then I got to – by the time I got to grow up and play with them, and when I was in a high school level, and the guys that were coming back, I mean, we had guys that took my dad to the state finals, come back as 25-year-olds playing against me when I was in high school, and it always made you better. It was an awesome way to get raised. Well, it really was.
The best for me, you know, not that I was some amazing basketball player, but I remember the year that I made the biggest leap was when I started playing, not at the elementary school with all my friends, but I would go to the community center and play against 45-year-old men. And it's a confidence thing. And I remember being in middle school and going, and one of the guys I played with was in high school already. And he took me to the open gym in high school. And I actually played just fine, scored mm-hmm. points and defense. And it, so when you know that you can play at that level, like you don't know how good basketball can be until you play against people that play it that well.
Yeah.
And so until you see that and experience that firsthand is until you're like, oh, I didn't realize it. You know, I could, that move even existed. You know, I'm gonna take that for myself. No next doubt. Time. So by the time, I'm sure you were, as a 13-year-old, I mean, you were probably killing people.
Yeah, you know, that was the crazy thing is that, you know, I was probably got, at by the time I was like 15, I was probably the tallest I would ever get. And, but I was, I played on a really good team with some really good players. And my senior year, I started at the two guard. We went 19-4, district runner-ups. Got upset in the district final. We were the number one seed. But we had won the district championship the year before. But we slipped up, and I sure didn't have a good game that night. Not everybody did. But we were a good team. We were big up front. My senior year, we were like 6'6", 6'5", 6'3", up front. We were an inside team that could shoot. And I was a three-point bomb artist. That's what...
Well, that's what you're known as in the comedy league.
Yeah, I was a bomb. I was a long-range bomber. But back in those days, you know, I was a, you know, I was a really tough, I mean,
not
threat.
To sell you short, you could bring the ball inside as well too.
I can, you
you're,
know,
you're a fan of a head fake and take it to the to
oh
the
no rim. Doubt I can draw a foul. I'm a good actor out there,
but then that just goes back to am I trying to draw a foul or a charge?
I'm like, listen, as much as I'm not a fan of him, I know I play like Isaiah Thomas, and not the talent way, in the, you know, the whatever little advantages you can get way, little, you know, hey, listen, man, when you're undersized your whole life and you're playing against bigger kids and you're scrapping for it, I learned little tricks of the trade on how to play some defense and, you know, especially off the ball defense. You know what you have to do more? You do more at anything when you're guarding somebody off the ball is you stay with them step for step and you keep your eyes on the officials. That's what you do. You can grab jerseys, you can pull hips, you can do whatever, and you're better off, like, you
know,
especially.
Wait, go back. You said keep the eyes on the officials?
Well, you know, when you're playing off the ball defense and you're staying step for step with somebody and you know something might be working for them, yeah, because there's two, now three maybe eyes on what's going
on the play.
Yeah, and when you're small, you can get lost in big bodies moving through the paint. You can grab onto it, you can pull his like little pelvic right there, just right in and just pull him and throw him off step. Throw, you know, bang your knee in the back of his thigh, throw him off step because, you know, they're trying to get open.
Yeah. Well, that's the only time I've ever been ejected from a game was because of a similar player on an opposing team. And it was like a real competitive summer league tournament. And he was just a smart, like, he just kept grabbing. And finally, I just turned around and I just pushed him on the ground. So my teammates claim I punched him. I'm like, I didn't punch him, but he was on the ground. And the coach was like, well, I guess you're not going to be playing anymore today. I was like, yeah, sorry about that, coach. But it's just, it's so annoying. Like,
I'll admit what I did.
Oh, my God.
This is the best thing I ever got away with. This is the best thing I ever got away with. And this was against our rival, Lorraine Steelman, my senior year. We were actually, they beat us that night. And you know what? Karma will bite you in the ass, I guess, because they beat us that night. We were 11-0. So we were 11-0. And this was the
home or away
at our place. We had already beaten them. We had beaten them in the second game of the season by 20 at their place. They came back with a whole new starting five except one guy. This is a heartbreaker. We lose our top scorer, twists an ankle in the first quarter. We lose him. We end up losing by 3 at the end of the thing. And they just played their minds off. But there was a play in this tight game. They were our crosstown rival. And the place was packed at our place, and the ball was right out in front of the visitors' cheering section. That was just sardine, the Lorraine Steelman section. And there was a long pass against the press coming up along the sidelines, and this kid was jumping up, Lorraine player jumping up to retrieve it. And they were going to their basket that way. And I kind of crashed in a little bit as the ball came, but it was a free ball. No call was called. We both kind of went down, reaching for it to the ground, and the ball sputtered in front of us as, like, other players were running to it. And he had a step on me. I was behind him, and he got bent off his knee, and he was going to come get it.
So he's, like, lunging at the ball.
He's going towards the ball in the beginning. And I looked up, and as I looked up, I knew that because the officials were trying to run the court from the play, and I knew by that time that the back official was right on our left, and he kind of watched him, and he turned his head right to the ball ahead away from me and his peripheral, and I saw that, and I grabbed the back of his sneaker as he was, like, lifting up and thrusting out, and I just and I just pushed it right down to the ground. 1,000 Lorraine High fans saw it. They all stood up. Ah, they went bananas. The place went nuts. Another kid from our team picked up the ball. We went the other way and scored a layup in transition, right? And the place on over this ref's shoulder was screaming, and people knew who I was. I was the coach's son. There was this guy going, as we came back down to defend the next time. They were in my jaw. One of the fondest, when you think about things that happen and they just go bang, bang, that was, you know.
But having 1,000 people yell at you, that's got to feel incredible.
At least a few hundred, because there was 2,000 in the gym, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. Belligerent heist, yeah.
But still, a lot. A whole section of people.
Oh, man. That's, well.
And he just, like, Matt Kellyanne, he looked up over his shoulder and looked at me, and he just was like, shook his head. He was like, man, I was like. You know what? And then we were going the other way. Our crowd just went up in a roar because we were going the other way for a transition bucket. It was crazy because there was 1,000. There was 2,000 people screaming at once because whoever was for them was screaming at me, and whoever was for us was getting on their feet as they saw a bucket being scored in a tight game. You know what I mean? Like, we got beat that.
The only time I've ever done anything remotely close to that, it's in against. Friends of mine, you know, like if it was like Ari or Dave Taylor. I love Dave Taylor.
Like, he's fun to I thought I was fun to watch play basketball.
I will grab both of his, like with both of my hands, will grab like the back of his jersey, but like and shorts at the same time, you know, and like just hold it tight to my body. He's like stuck. But the refs are confused because it's obviously a foul, but then they obviously know that we're just kind of messing around. But it's I don't try to go over the line with it. But that's the extent of my kind of pulling. And damn, what a perfect! That's great. The fact that you guys scored 2 points though—that's the icing on the cake.
The other way, it was great.
Well, I wanted one thing. I had you here. I wanted to bring up Cleveland.
Yeah.
Sports.
Everybody always does.
I know, because
people always come up to me like, dude, like people come up to me in the middle of a season, like I haven't seen them in a while, like saying, you know, like at the improv or something, be like, hey dude, how you doing? I'm like, good. They're like, you doing all right, man? Clay, wow, you doing okay, man? I had that Browns game last Sunday, like we like game, like we were like, hey, doing all right? Like they talk to me like it's like my girlfriend became a paraplegic and I'm staying with her. You're like, dude, you all right, bro?
You're like, is it hard?
Dude, how you doing, man? You doing okay over there, man? You need to go out or something. Hey, man, if you just need to go out, just go out some night. Just call me, man. It's like, no, she's not. Everything's fine. It's
like, I hate Johnny Manziel. Kevin Love might get traded. It doesn't. It's not going to matter.
Golden State.
And the Indians. Yeah. Who knows with that? Well,
The thing about baseball is, and I think some people disagree with me, but I think this is the economics of baseball has greatly changed with the steroids out of the game because whether you want them in or you don't, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, I like the purity of baseball. I like pitchers. I like, I like where the game's at actually from a pitching and offense standpoint.
Do you like the pitching clock? I mean, it saves like 8 minutes a game. So for me, I'm just kind of whatever. What the new thing for me? They got the new net now. I guess they're trying to unveil that sweeps out. So now, if you're sitting behind the dugout and you're tweeting or texting or Instagramming, like, look at these badass seats. Now there's a net right there, and so that got into one of my. I don't get on Facebook wars or arguments. I did today over netting. With some lady, which then morphed into cell phones,
and then it got racist
out of nowhere. I was like, neither of us are black. What are we talking about?
How did Beyonce get into this?
Nothing to do with the Black Panthers. Everything to do with spoiled hot dogs.
Right,
but
yeah, being a Cleveland fan, man, it's rough. It's you know, it's.
Jacobs Field.
Well, yeah, they progressive now, but we still call it the Jake.
For me, it's always Jacobs Field and Tomey and Ramirez and Alomar and Lofton and
Bell.
Man, you had Justice.
Yeah, justice for a few. We had, you know, Eddie Murray was on our first World Series team at the end. He still had a great year. He hit over 395 with, I think.
Well, I mean, you guys sold. There was
almost
there
90
was,
ribbies.
There was not an unsold ticket at Jacobs Field. I think
453, I think there is. 453 consecutive. That's 82. That's 45, 8. That's like six and a half seasons.
I mean, and I remember the first day that they didn't sell out. It made Sports Center. They were like, this is the first day in, you know, since
it was fun
1995 or whatever.
I was at both Game 5s. I was at the Game 5 against Atlanta. We lost to Tom Glavine at the Jake. And then in 97, I was at Game 5 when Oral gave up that three-run bomb. They should have took him
out. That's right. Oral Hershiser.
Gave up that three-run bomb to Moises Alou. We had that game. If we would have went up ahead. We would have gone to Florida up 3-2 for 6 and 7. Instead, we went down 3-2. We won game six.
This is 97.
97. We won game six, and we were a fucking out away from
it. Well, then you had that horrible LeVon Hernandez game. If you go back and watch, where he had 15 strikeouts.
Yeah, well, listen, guys are going to do that. Chad OJ won two games in that series. My thing is we should have won game five, been up 3-2. We got to close it out in game six. We won game six, and then we're one out away in game seven, and we lose.
Now, is that the equivalent of fumbling the ball on the three-yard line?
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, to give up the – I mean, I don't think it's that bad, you know, because – well, the game seven is. Yeah, game seven is definitely the equivalent of fumbling at the goal line. I think it's even – worse, because that was for the world title and we were the better team and we had been a great team for years. The fumbling at the goal line was to get into a Super Bowl that Denver got their asses handed to them in.
Yeah, yeah. That's what people,
you know what I mean? Like, so
even now I'm like, oh yeah, when you said that, I'm like, oh yeah, that wasn't the Super Bowl. People, I mean, like, history.
We've never been to one.
History has never been to a Super Bowl. The Browns. See, that history has just painted that moment, and it's a big moment, but it's just, it's become the ultimate, you know, it's like Frank Gifford getting laid out in 1955 or 56 or whatever year that, you know, there's the Browns just in Beinern. Was that 88 or no? What year was that fumble? 87?
87.
Yeah, 87.
Well, 88 was the January.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And now, is it the ownership, or is it just so much comfort with all the misery in the
well, that's the fans, a difference. See, those Browns. See, that's one thing that nobody really understands, and I've tried to lament this before, is that the Browns, those Browns that, you know, we suffered with up until those are the Ravens. Okay.
Yes.
This is an expansion team that's had three basically different owners. In 16 years. We've been back into football for 16 years. We are the Texans. We are the Jaguars. We are, you know, that's really what we are at the end of the day. And, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers have had three head coaches in the last 50 years. We've had three owners in the last 16 of an expansion team. It's just not the family business that went to Baltimore. It's you know, the Cleveland Browns are the Baltimore Browns. And when in hindsight, you know, I wrote something about this years ago, kind of like in a blog, and I said, you know, what's sad after Baltimore won their second Super Bowl, and I said, you know what's upsetting is that maybe we should have just let them take the Browns to Baltimore. And maybe we should have just sat back and not asked for an expansion team. Maybe we should have said, you know what? Baltimore's close. Pittsburgh's close. Cincy's close. A lot of other markets that they will play is close. Buffalo, New York's close. DC's close. Detroit's close. Indy's close. Chicago's close. Let's just go support the Baltimore Browns and try to take it for what it is. Now, fan loyalty, it's easier said than done. I mean, any team in any city, if the...
But it feels different.
If the Chiefs left, you'd like say you're not taking that name. We are going to get our team. You're going to do that because you're loyal, and that you should.
Absolutely.
And the
fans
should. And we should have demanded the Browns' name and keep the Browns. It's more of one of those Bill Simmons' what ifs, because eventually the people that were really mad and would have said, screw it, I'm not a Browns fan. They went to Baltimore. Maybe over a few years and they saw how Baltimore was good and that the Browns were beating the Steelers and winning a Super Bowl and then still beating the Steelers and then winning. And maybe once an old Browns fan that could sit back and let the wounds heal looks out and goes, wow, they're hiring a guy like Harbaugh. That's a winner, man. Wow, they drafted a Flacco. That's a hard-working win. Dude, those are Browns. Those are the types of players we used to have in Cleveland that made us pride. Now, listen, we had never won a Super Bowl up until 1994, but we had had some great years. We had went to three out of four AFC championship games in the 80s. We had the, you know, when you talk about championships, NFL championships, if you want to count them before the merger and all the other stuff, we have seven. I mean, we still have more championships than the Steelers because the Steelers had never won an NFL championship. They only won six Super Bowls, only. That's when you know you're just a disparaged Browns fan. You know, I mean, they've only won six Super Bowls. We won seven NFL championships when there was like eight teams in the league. Big deal. But the thing is, you know, the Browns are in Baltimore, and more people got to get on that and realize that, you know, it's a different. I mean, we got a guy that's already verbally said, the guy that owns our team is Jimmy Haslam. He's a Tennessee guy. His brother's the governor of Tennessee. He's already inquired with the NFL whether he could trade this team for the Titans if ownership came up there when there was things going wrong in Tennessee, which is another dumpster fire of a situation that's happening. But I mean, the Browns right now, it's unbelievable. I mean, I told them they're 16 years old. I told somebody recently, I said, you know what? Listen, I'm giving them till 20 years old. Listen, if they ain't got their shit together by the time they're 20, they're cut off.
They're moving out. They're
That's what my dad told me.
They're out of the house.
That's what my dad told me.
Now, what does that mean? A Super Bowl?
Or no, just get your shit together.
Just like maintain just some sort of
Look what they've done. We had three picks. We took in 2014, we took three picks. We had three picks in the draft before Derek Carr was even taken.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I'm telling you, Justin Gilbert, we took a cover corner from the worst defensive conference in the history of college football, the Big 12. Let me tell you something. The Big 12 football conference right now scores more points than the Big 12 basketball conference.
Yeah, you're right.
And let me tell you something.
Yeah, you're right.
They do. It's the worst defensive conference in history. We take a cover corner from him. This guy's played. Gilbert's played 30 snaps in 2 years. He can't do anything right. Janie Manziel, we trade that. We get that pick to trade down from the Colts. We trade up to 22 to secure a pick that nobody wanted. Nobody was taking him. The only other idiot that might have took him was if Jerry Jones's people would have maybe let him take him in the fourth round. Manziel wasn't going anywhere. And we take this guy. Now, the only good pick we had was that 33, our original second rounder, first pick in the second round. We took Bitonio, which is an all-pro tackle, thank Christ. But then Derek Carr goes right after that. I mean, what? Who's watching what?
And then
you have a star, and
you get suspended for what, a year for weed?
Yeah. And then the funny thing, I could go on. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. The funny thing about this knucklehead Gordon is, you know,
is that his third strike? Like three?
Let me tell you.
But talented.
I can't even.
Talented. But, I mean, you can't play.
But here's the problem with the Browns. And this is the Browns' foresight. So the year before when they had Hoyer, that they took Hoyer out of the job, remember, and gave it to Manziel? So listen to this. We went from this. Can you just try to achieve this in 2014 starts with us starting 6-4 with Hoyer, okay, on a Manziel never playing and Josh Gordon serving a 10-game suspension. We are at the 10-game mark, and we are in first place in the AFC North at that time.
And everyone's saying we're getting our guy back.
And we are depending so much. We're 6-4, and we're acting like we're 4-6, and we need Gordon to get us back in this thing. And we're depending so much on a guy you can't depend on, right? So then we go, and what happens is, Gordon even admitted this in an interview in week 13. He hung Hoyer out to dry a few times. He's like, man, I didn't have the routes run. I was a little out of shape. We just start going, after Hoyer had spread the wealth all 10 games to guys like, you know, Austin Rivers, what's his name? Miles Austin, you know, to all these other guys that we had, that we were throwing the ball to.
But it was working. It was successful.
It was successful. Gordon now comes we back. Go and everything's just Gordon, 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 and teams stack up on that.
And he doesn't know the playbook.
And they stack up on that in the run, and he doesn't know he's not running the rounds. Hoyer starts throwing a few picks. They bench him for Johnny. We end up losing the last five going out with Manziel, and then we go 4-12 again this season, basically with him in and out of car wrecks of the season as court backup, starter pulled, benched, drinking, partying, bye week, fucking everything. You know what I mean? What am I supposed to do with this guy? What are you doing with this? What are you doing here?
He's 22
what are you
years
doing
old,
here? Now, Hoyer, say what you want about Hoyer, yeah, but him and Brand Weeden end up taking the Texans to the playoffs.
So now what? New quarterback. You going to get the kid out of Cal Berkeley?
Who knows what we're going to do.
You going to get the kid out of North Dakota State?
There's a little rumblings that maybe, depending on what Denver's doing, Osweiler might be available, and the Browns supposedly are asking about Osweiler.
They might be asking. He'll stay in Denver.
I don't know Manning's why he would. Gone. I didn't think he would.
Osweiler's a Montana guy. Like he grew up in the Montana, and that which is that's Broncos country.
Sure.
And so I'm sure he probably grew up a Broncos fan. Yeah. There are horses. I mean, like, actually, about 40 miles.
There's probably more real Bronco fans than there are football Bronco fans.
There's actually an
like
island.
They like the Broncos football team, but they love Broncos.
Yeah. There's an island 40 miles from where he grew up that's actually just called Horse Island that just is an island in the middle.
It's like, hey, dude, you want to go to the Broncos game this Sunday? He's like, no, dude, I'm going to ride Broncos this Sunday. Oh, I like those guys, but.
That's great. And so, and then lastly, let's talk about LeBron one. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, as the days of our lives, hourglass turns over, the LeBron sands are winding down now.
Yeah.
You know, he's only really got, let's just give him 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I say that having said, let's give Kobe 3 years, mm-hmm. 3 years ago, and then he didn't play for two of those. But I think he's got more, but he's got a lot of games on his legs. I mean, you've got maybe three, four legitimate more possibilities, I think.
Yeah.
In Cleveland to get an NBA championship.
Best case scenario for the Cavs and LeBron is if the NBA would cut down to a 52-game schedule right now. That's not going to happen. They decide to really spell him and make – Here's what I would do. I mean, I'm no genius, but I've watched enough basketball to know that this stuff don't mean anything this regular season, okay? And I would pick amount of games that we're shutting him down. And, you know, it doesn't take too much to coach, and you have all these extra scouts around to figure out ways we're going to attack opponents when we know LeBron is sitting out and not even in playing. You know what? Popovich does it all the time. It's no joke that Popovich will spench all four starters and put them in street clothes on a marquee TNT game against the Miami Heat when LeBron was there. He doesn't care. The NBA cries. Fans go, that's not cool. And he goes, guess what? I'm still going to win this title.
Like, guess
I don't
what?
Care.
We're 28-0 at home.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Back
so
off.
Whatever. If I'm the 2 seed, then I win from as the 2 seed. I don't care if that's the case. I want to, but he'll make sure he's once. I just think that you have to incorporate, if you're going to be firing coaches, you have to incorporate some logic other than what you're drawing up on the dry erase board. And I think with LeBron, and you're right, there's no doubt, you know, he's fresh legged, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. These guys are still fresh legged.
Don't forget Brandon Rush over there.
I'm just saying, they're all fresh legged and hungry.
All the time.
And, you know, you have to be ready.
They all play like 18 minutes.
And that's fine.
22 a game.
That's fine, you know, but you have to be ready for the playoffs. And I think if you're going to be ready to have LeBron be as effective for you as he can to win a title against where he's at in his career age wise, you got to get him his rest and have him as fresh as a fiddle come June.
Somehow, I mean, it's one of those things where you can't. I was gonna say, oh, maybe they can work a deal.
I don't think they can work a deal. I don't think they're good enough to win the championship, no matter what the deal is. Dwight Howard's not gonna help.
Dwight Howard's horrible. I mean, what a bust for a career. That guy.
Celtics would be dumb to give Dwight Howard. There were some rumblings I read about the Celtics maybe going after Dwight Howard. But, you know, the Celtics, I'll tell you what, that's a good young team. That's the team that really scares me in the East. If we got into a 7-game battle and we're not clicking on all cylinders, and especially if Boston did make a trade, I think Boston's one player away from being as good. Brad Stevens is the best coach in the conference. There's no doubt about it.
And he's a kid.
He's the best coach in the Eastern Conference, bar none. And they're good. I mean, Isaiah's good. They play together. There's an identity without having a big name, and that's important. And if I, you know, if I thought that you could get another really good player that wouldn't have to like own the stage there, but still really contribute in a big way, they could be dangerous.
And there's really, I mean, out of the East, it's and then there's Toronto, which goes on this weird, like, hey, we won 13 games in a row. It's like, yeah, who were you playing? And you know,
well, they're just a great regular season game.
Yeah, well, then that's with the record at stake, and that's the 60 or the 72-10.
They'll get it. It's easy.
You think they will? You don't think that as the season progresses and teams are fighting for playoff spots and these games actually start?
You know, the teams
they don't start counting until April. And then the 5-month playoffs start, which I love that. That's a whole other season.
Oh, my God. If you play a full playoff season and go 6 or 7 games, you're playing another quarter of a season. So if you go to the playoffs 4 years in a row and play that length of a schedule, you're adding a season. Every 4 years, you're adding a season of basketball on your
And then you wonder why Kobe Bryant, the wheels just fell off completely.
He's 40.
And that's how you become a star. Like, you get not only – are you playing an additional 2 months? You're on the highlights 2 months, but there's only 8 other teams playing, you know? And like, so I just like Lorenzo Cain with the Royals, household name now for most kids throughout the country.
Yeah.
Perennial all-star, back-to-back World Series. It's weird when I go to different cities and people can name me the Royals starting
lineup.
Yeah, it's very weird. I'm like, how do you know Alcides Escobar? Like, I mean, yeah, he's an all-star, but I'm like, he's not. I'm like, I guess, yeah, you're a baseball fan and you've seen them play now in the World Series back, you know, so there's something to be said about actually obtaining that elite star status.
You used to wear that hat around, people would walk by and be like, dude, I love that cola. Stuff's awesome.
Yeah, I love Royal Crown, man. Yeah, that is my jam.
KC's great.
I remember it was June of 2014 and they had just gone into first place for the first time in like 20 years. And I remember I was going up to Reno, driving up there to do a show, and I stopped in the middle of nowhere, probably outside of like Stockton or something. Walk in, guy sees my hat, he goes, oh, Royals fan, huh? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh man, good luck this year. You guys got a good team. And I'm like, that's the first time anyone's ever said have a good team to me while I was wearing
Royals. You have a great nickname. I love the nickname. I love Royals.
It's
I love the nickname.
And you had that weird Lord song where she saw the George Brett picture that was like that was.
I just love the Kansas City Royals. I just think that's a great nickname. I think you guys have always had a great like emblem. Well,
I think this
cool stadium, unique in that way.
The story, if I am regurgitating it correctly, it has something to do with Hallmark, I believe. Like Hallmark's based in Kansas City. And they, you know, they kind of had this.
Really?
They have in the heart of Kansas City, it's called Crown Center. And it's the shops and these like fountains everywhere and stuff like that. So I think, and then at one point they had a now defunct ABA team that was called the Knights. And then Sacramento originally in Kansas City
as
the Kings.
Right.
And if it's not that, it's a Native American, like the Jersey Devils, previously the Colorado Rockies NHL, before that, the Kansas City Scouts in the 70s. You know, so it's either a Native Chiefs. American or, you know, Royal kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah. For Kansas City sports, for whatever. And I don't know what a monarch is. I do.
A monarch is kind of a ruler.
What am I saying? Of course I know what a monarch is.
It's a king.
It plays right back into the Royals thing.
Yeah.
I never put that together until now. Don't I feel. But yeah,
this has been a fun history lesson.
I've been like soaking in all this baseball history. I got this other really cool one about baseball facts laying around that I got for Christmas. Can't get enough.
Me and my girlfriend played Trivia Pursuit yesterday, and I blew her away with some of the sports questions I answered that she did. She was like, how do you know that?
SportsCenter playing in the background.
I'm just stupid.
Well,
I just do. That's what I know. That's one of those things I grew up. I memorized the back of baseball cards, you know, basketball cards. I used to memorize the box scores. My dad used to yell at me, go, give me anything. I would sit and have cereal in the summer mornings. My mom, they were teachers, so we had summers with our family. I woke up and I would eat cereal. And I would memorize the box scores. I made sure I knew how many home runs Dave Winfield had that day, if he had any that last night. And when they like would put it in the quotes, like home run Winfield 15, I knew how many. I knew everybody's ERA. I knew everything about it. And I used to, I used to turn the volume down on the TV sets, Indians games when I was a kid in the early 80s when, like, you know, Julio Franco was coming up and we had those guys, and I would do the play-by-play myself.
Oh, man. Yeah. You must have been the awesome kid. I hope my kid someday
and
does
then
that.
I did it for, like, high school football and basketball. They don't cover baseball in high school, like, radio-wise, but we did Friday nights, like, football and basketball. I did it for a few years. And that was fun. And then, you know, I'd always wanted to do stand-up way back when I was a kid growing up. I was like, even in the back of my mind, you just never know how to do it. So, you know, I didn't get the, you know, bravery.
But you always
I didn't have the bravery to get up and to still and do it until I was like 31, 32.
Oh, man, aren't you glad you did?
Yeah, dude. It's ridiculous.
It's not like it's some easy road, but man, you've been all over the country, all over the world.
It's been amazing.
What's the biggest crowd you've hit up? 5,000, 7,000, you know, like... I mean, I've seen some of the pictures of some of these videos.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest crowd probably would have been, I guess 4,000 probably.
4,000 people.
Chicago Theater, right around there somewhere. Maybe that was the biggest. I mean, we played some other big places, though. Blessings in this business. It's ridiculous from the start of it in Cleveland with Nick Costas, the owner, and guys like Bill and all sorts of guys. I mean, I could go on and on and on, you know.
Yeah, it's because you're a funny, good guy. This is not a coincidence.
You know,
the two go hand in hand.
I appreciate
really.
That, John. I mean, you know, it's, I appreciate that. I've worked hard over the
exactly.
last few
years. It's hard work, you know, and you put in the hard work, man. I remember,
it is hard work. Road dates and, you know, taking stuff sometimes.
Speaking of, where are you going to be?
I'll be in Reno. I can't wait. I'm going, what's that, March 1st? I'm doing a one-nighter in Ramona, some of that theater.
I guess you can go to jasonlawhead.com and you'll have them posted there.
Yeah, it's going to be updated, yeah.
So, Reno.
So I got a week at the Laugh Factory in Reno at the Silver Legacy Casino, which I'm excited to go stay in because my favorite movie of all time, my favorite comedy of all time is Kingpin. And
you can't bowl at the stadium. I went in there and tried. You can't bowl.
What?
It's like a sacred ground for bowling. I thought, Jody. Anyway.
Oh, you just killed me.
I'm sorry.
I didn't even research. I just assumed I was going to be a. I was going to buy like one of those big Earn McCracken like rodeo shirts.
Can you? He's going to Reno next week. He thought he was going to go into the bowling. I just crushed his dreams because he thought he was going to be able to bowl at the bowling museum. And they're having these tournaments, and I'm like,
what do you think? What if if I'm one of the entertainers at the hotel? I might have a chance as being one of the entertainers. I mean, they're putting me up for free, and they are paying me to perform in their hotel. Maybe I should slide it in the writer.
Call ahead. I mean, look, it was to the point where I did a sports morning show there. Even the host of the sports show is like, man, I've only bowled there because I brought it up. I was like, come on, what is going on? He's like, I've only bowled there once, and it was at a charity event. I'm like, so you have to earn the right, which I respect that. You know, it's like you can't just walk into Cooperstown. And
seriously, what are we going to do with a rubber hand?
You know, one of my favorite movies. Some of the best quotable lines.
I mean, it's Big Earn McCracken.
When Big Earn slides, he's like, scatter. He's like, I've been 427.
It's 11:03, by the way.
11:03.
It is 11:03. Yeah,
it must be a year for every topping on this table. I mean, just
V.
Yeah.
Munson.
Amazing.
It's been a long time, Ern. Yeah, I'd say about a year for every topping on the table.
The best intro.
You know, I heard a horrible rumor. creepy. You know, for the first couple of years, I felt responsible. How you been otherwise? I mean, this guy...
One of the biggest assholes, if not the biggest of all time.
It's amazing. The performance that Big Earn McCracken delivers. Bill Murray, if you've never seen this movie and you're listening, please just go get Kingpin. It's a great story, too. It takes you for the ride. I mean, when he does the... When Big Earn does the...
He's grabbing all the
this the hot single mom, the unified fund.
That's
that's
hilarious.
I learned through the unified fund? If you give just a little, you get a whole lot more.
Check that out right there.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's at a bowling alley up in Ventura.
That is so cool. I want that piece
that's
of
a,
art.
That is a huge 8 foot. What we're looking at now is a huge 8 foot mural, or probably 10 foot mural, of Big Ernie McCracken holding up the Rose bowling ball. And that's in Ventura. I forget the name of that place. It was a show I did there years ago.
All right,
so, man, love that. Man,
oh, that movie is it's by far one of the most underrated great comedy classics that's ever existed. I mean, Woody's always been one of my favorite actors of all time, but, and Bill Murray too. I mean, when those two guys got in that movie together, and I saw that, I mean, you know, and I've got to, like, the coolest thing is that I'm a huge fan of that movie, always have been from the minute it came out, and owned it on. I used to own that movie on VHS. Back in the day.
Yeah, I could say I had a copy floating around. On definitely VHS, a few on yeah. DVDs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've gone through all that. Yeah, yeah. I've got it downloaded, whatever. I mean, I'll watch it. I watch it all the time. But my girlfriend hates me for it. But so she's
the
like,
conditioner. I've already read this one. He's like, yeah. Read the back.
You got any of that meant to dent? Yeah, I mean, that movie is just, I could quote that movie, watch that movie.
It's Kingpin, Lebowski. For Lebowski's me, Billy Madison, great. Probably Happy Gilmore for me. That was just kind of my Spaceballs a lot when I was a kid.
Mr. Mom's one of my favorite comedies ever
house
in my
guest
life.
With Sinbad. I'll throw it in there.
House Guest with Sinbad.
ST3 in the house.
Is Phil Hartman in that?
Yes, Phil Hartman is. Rest in peace. And listeners, rest that's why you don't marry someone that's psycho.
I know.
Okay? You don't want to get shot by your wife. Because she's off her meds. Just throwing that. That's a PSA to anyone or women listening. Don't marry someone crazy. So there you go. There's that. Sorry to bring the mood down.
No, I loved Phil Hartman. He was one of my favorites. Dude, one of the reasons I got into comedy was probably because of Phil Hartman.
Dude, I'll agree with that. That was one of my personal favorites too. And so then okay. So after you're not going to the Hall of Fame, Reno, and then next stop, you going back east, Midwest.
No, here's something that I'm going to do different this year. As I'm going to, you know, once I start delivering the podcast more on the regular basis, I am not looking to travel across, like, even Denver. I really haven't given money avails.
Like, let me go here for a couple days, maybe.
I'll go to New York City for a couple of weeks and maybe do, like, in the summer, do a weekend at the Jersey Shore to Uncle Vinny's and maybe Levity and some spots in the city. But I'm not really putting my avails out to any clubs that's far. Like I'm kind of in that like feature, maybe they'll headline you one night type thing, and it's hard to just keep traveling like that, you know. I got a girl that I want to spend more time with, so I'm like, hey, listen, I'm gonna do is like the Vegas is like I got Vegas and then another week in Reno coming up. I got, like I said, I got Reno March 1st through the 6th, but I'm not gonna, I just did,
there's a lot
Scottsdale
of work on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm doing Brea, like, you know, so there's
Seattle,
good work.
Portland,
yeah,
flights,
I'm gonna start doing all that.
Salt Lake City,
San Francisco,
flights,
exactly.
There's
I'm not going farther than Denver.
I love it
this year.
Unless we can do something in Kansas.
Well, unless
City,
somebody calls,
unless,
you know,
like, dude, hey man, let's go.
Listen,
to Kansas
if
City.
If I can get there and travel and put a few some bucks in my pocket,
yeah,
I got to be able to put some bucks in my pocket, man.
Okay.
You know?
Well, we'll talk. Yeah. Listeners, go to jasonlawhead.com, Twitter at jasonlawhead. Anything else you'd like to
say?
No,
man, it was a blast. I'm if you want to go to my YouTube page as well, it's jasonlawhead7, the number 7 /jasonlawhead7. I got some videos up there, all that kind of stuff, some clips from
the
web.
We will be tweeting all of that out. All right, hey,
brother, this was fun, man. Thanks for having me, man. I'm glad we got back together.
Absolutely, man. We'll talk
soon. Jason Lawhead. Yeah, what's up, New York? How are you? Yes. That's exciting, man. I tell you, this is the place to be live from, man. It's so good to come here. This is the energy, this town, you people. Come out, no matter what the weather is. You seek live entertainment like God intended it with other human beings, right? You're not at home living your lives on a status update, telling people what you're doing all day on Facebook, like, we give a shit. Do you have these friends? Every 5 minutes, their problems are yours. I was like, laundry, laundry, laundry. Just stop typing it and go do it. How about that? Apparently, you have 3 loads that need to be done from what I'm reading. That age now where I'm still single, but all my friends I grew up with, they're having kids and families. They want to tell you about their kids' day on Facebook. It's like, listen, I'm not Tanner's friend. I don't really give a shit what he or she is doing. I don't even know what a Tanner is. Is that a boy or a girl? What is a Tanner? They're always like, Tanner's got soccer. Maybe we'll get pizza. Like, who gives a shit?
Listen, I'm the youngest of seven Irish Catholics, originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I would have loved to seen my old man have that when we were growing up, telling his friends what we were up to on Facebook all day. They'd log in and see, like, hey, just beat my kid for getting in the liquor cab. And I'm like, what? Two minutes ago? That's terrible. I can't. You think we should comment on this at all? My mom would give the thumbs up like she liked to stand us. Like, no, what the fuck? You know, because that's the thing. That's where we're living in this day. You know, you could be at home watching reality TV, you know, rotting your brain with that mush. It's like 20 years later, it's more popular than it's ever been. It's like, when did not having a talent become a talent in this country? It's like keeping up with the Kardashians. Like, what are we still keeping up with at this point? How pathetic Bruce Jenner's life turned out? Is that this sad sack of shit, the only person with talent in the whole family, just sloughing around the house, four Armenian broads nagging his ass, five if you count Chloe twice, you're just looking at him like...
Jason, you are the man. Thanks again for coming on. And again, I can't reiterate this enough, listeners. The man is a killer. I just saw him 3 hours ago crushing at Madhouse down here in San Diego. So if he's coming to your neighborhood, Reno, he's going to be at, as mentioned, later on this month. Just go to jasonlawhead.com, at Jason Lawhead on Twitter. Of course, we'll be tweeting that out on Sportsaholics. Guys, it's been a great, actually had a great time this week. Very informative. Definitely want to thank Dr. Larry Foley. Guys, please, again, thefirstboysofspring.weebly.com. I mean, at this point, it's a jingle. thefirstboysofspring.weebly.com. Go check it out. Share the trailer. Let people know that's going to be on MLB Network this Sunday morning. Spread the word. I know that you know people that are baseball fans that would love to watch this. And if not, just tweet it out to the baseball community. It would be much appreciated. And yeah, I guess that about wraps up this episode. Eric is in New England enjoying the New England winter. Hopefully he's getting some 50 degree days there, which is, you know, 80, 90 degree equivalent out here on the West Coast, which it's been unusually hot, like in the mid 90s in LA. Yeah, I'm complaining about heat already. It's February, and I'm complaining about heat. I can only imagine how hot this summer is going to be. But, guys, thanks again for listening. Remember, if you're in Los Angeles, the Show Up, Go Up open mic every Sunday, a show run by my co-host Eric Marino every Sunday night at the Comedy Store, 8433 Sunset Boulevard. And also, if you're in Fort Collins, Colorado, next month, Eric will be opening up for Saturday Night Live's Leslie Jones and opening for her also on several other dates. So if you're going to go see Leslie Jones in the next couple months somewhere in this great country, guess what? You're going to also see Eric Marino, which will be fantastic and good for you. But guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word, and stay obsessed.